Welcome to the Professional Insight Podcast, episode season 5, episode we don't know. My name's Brandon Curry. Oh, thanks, rookie. Episode 11. My name's Brandon Curry. Where is everybody else? Oh, there they are.
Come on, I'm now. Jeff Bell.
Josh Bond.
And Trevor Lindy.
We do have a great guest today. He's just in the green room right now, waiting patiently. Back. All right. Frank DiPietro, rookie, bring him in. There he is.
What's going on, Frankie?
Hi, everyone.
Hey, Frank.
Good morning. Good to see you all.
Thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
So, afternoon now.
Yeah, it's well,
not quite.
Yeah.
Not quite.
Oh, that's 6 minutes. Ah, we got 6 minutes.
Off, Jeff.
Let's go. We're off for people that I've last night we had a chat that us were at two players, right? I mean, it was in the real estate industry, Sally Magar and Margie Spence, Magar Realty.
It was hilarious. LePage. It was hilarious. It was awesome.
Flowing, eh, Jeff?
Glad you guys all.
Looking Jeff. Oh, he's hungover.
Oh, I slept in good. I got at it last night, but I slept in. I'm good.
Yeah,
you did. You tore it up real good last night.
I used all our tickets up and then some.
Certainly did.
Yeah. You didn't drink one of your tickets there, Lindy.
I did. A couple.
No, I don't think you even had a beer.
Okay, fair enough. Think what you want, just like your whole other crap.
What other crap?
I'm not going to say because of the whole comments and the thing you keep reposting in our group chat. Just pertaining to hockey.
Oh nope. Once right. Again. Once again. No. He knows. Closet Leaf fan.
That hard he is, for sure.
So the reason why we got Frank
one more comment.
Is all right. What's the comment?
Jeff.
What
did he say?
Do you remember that you forgot that you talked to me earlier in the night?
About what?
No, you just forgot that we had an exchange. I haven't seen you all night. So yeah, we talked earlier in the night. You didn't remember.
One of those.
Yeah, he was lit pretty good. Lit pretty good.
I had a good time last night. Let's just say that. Work hard, play hard, boys.
So
work hard, play hard.
Absolutely.
The topic, the topic of this episode specifically came from one of our viewers, who constantly watches the show and comes on and we threw the chat on Restream here. And she has, we were, hello, Leanne. How are you? She had no idea about, and other come with the disability credit. So we covered that because that's a topic and it's extremely impactful. So I decided to bring Frank on from McKenzie Investments, who we as a firm, our firm, use McKenzie. And just full disclosure, not a lot of companies take on RDSPs. That's the Registered Disability Savings Plan that you can only get if you have a disability tax credit. Hi, Stone Seawitch. Hello. And she had no idea. So I want to touch on that, Hank, if you want to come on and briefly introduce yourself and Bet McKenzie and McKenzie's role on how they do RDSPs and with a couple of key cases for a couple of clients of mine.
Sure. So thanks, Brandon. Thanks. Yep. Here I am. Thanks so much for having me. What a great topic. So many Canadians affected by disability, you know, statistics show those over age 15, 1 in 5 Canadians are dealing with someone with a disability. And, you know, I'm part of the tax and estate group at McKenzie Investments. And back in 2008, when the government officially launched the RDSP, we made a pretty bold decision at the time to really sort of wrap our arms around the RDSP and really make this available to Canadians. No one else was really doing it like us. So anyway, here we are many years later. We're one of the top independent wealth managers in Canada offering RDSPs to those with disabilities or family who are looking after someone with a disability. We manage over $1 billion in Canadians' money, representing well over 50,000 accounts. So, and more work to do. Like you say, there's still an education gap. A lot of Canadians who still aren't aware of how to fully leverage the RDSP. So we're really proud of where we've come from and where we are today. And we continue in my role to work with financial advisors across Canada, like yourself and the group here, really bringing the RDSP to the market. And not only the product, but the knowledge as well. These aren't simple plans to understand. There's a lot of rules, and the government's always refining the rules and making changes. So part of our role is to stay on top of those changes. We sit in the federal budget every year in lockdown, getting all the tax changes. And that's generally where we see changes to RDSPs. And we're bringing that to the financial advisor market so that Canadians can leverage these things to the fullest extent possible. Governments really set aside a lot of money to help Canadians with disabilities save for their financial future. And that's really, at the end of the day, what we're trying to do in our tax and estate group and as part of what McKenzie does overall.
No, and you got such a great, let me see, I believe we had McKenzie Investments, correct? Yes, that is correct, Leanne, you can. McKenzie they are a massive fund company. However, one of the many fund companies that our firm deal with, however, when it comes to RDSPs, we solely deal with McKenzie because they do it so well. And you have an entire division. You're, I think, the only fund company that I love, entire division, unlike them, right? That's all you do is RDSP. And it's very a little bit serendipitous. This morning, a lady that, you know, actually a couple of us on here know, client of mine, she's 63. She is, gave me permission to mention her nicely, but she has bipolar 1. So she, in a high functioning for being formerly known as manic depressant. And she just got qualified for the disability tax credit. So I was pushing her and pushing her. I'm like, you're going to qualify. You have to qualify. She's like, I've been turned down. I'm like, yeah, but you were turned down like 15 years ago. And the definitions for the disability tax credit have extremely been more than been expanded. So that was such a great phone call to get this morning at 10 o'clock in the morning that literally this is very well potentially can change her life because it was back to 18.
Nice.
And Frank, you want to take people? Yeah. So Frank, tell people on how they but what can if, also
I know, go ahead. I know what an RDSP is. I know what it
so
is.
But that's like such a story.
Oh, go ahead, sorry, Frank.
I must be glitching out.
Yeah.
So just on that note, Brandon, I mean, that's such a great story. So I guess just for the audience, just an important reminder that in order to set up an RDSP, one of the criteria you require, eligible for the federal disability tax credit, which is a non-refundable tax credit that you claim on your time. And Brandon, as you're alluding to, this is something that if you have a disability, you need to have your medical professional, doctor, nurse practitioner, complete a government form and submit it to Revenue Canada, and they will approve or disapprove that form. If they approve it, great. You can claim this disability tax credit in your tax return. Great tax savings. But what it does is open up the doors to other things like being able to your own registered disability savings plan. So it's really, really important. What I generally tell people, and I'm glad you are persistent, Brandon, on this with this individual, is, you know, if you go through the process and you're denied, right, don't end there, right? And in fact, before you even submit the form to Revenue Canada, read it, right? Read the form. How did the doctor fill out the form? Because we've spoken to parents of children with disabilities who they know their children's disability better than the doctors do sometimes. And so if you don't agree with the doctor's assessment, child's disability, then talk to that doctor or get another opinion or go see a different doctor to fill it out who maybe can better articulate what the disability is. Because from Revenue Canada's perspective, they're going to accept or deny based on what the doctor says the disability is, right? And to your point, you know, things change over the years. Disabilities could progress or they could get better. And so if in 1 year you're denied, but perhaps the condition changes, then reapply, right? So it's important that, you know, we are our own self-advocates here and push where we feel we are entitled to something that's not being given to us.
Yeah, you're spot on with that. I mean, people need to understand. So we're gonna tackle a couple things here. We're gonna first tackle, because I know Bondo, you had a question about the RDSP, but and we'll definitely let you ask that question to Frank. Because we have options here too. What we've got basically is the disability tax credit application. So answer those. Jovi Fall, was he a goalie? Different Frank DiPietro. Were you a goalie? I mean,
Rick.
I know I'm
not. Rick DiPietro.
Yeah.
I wish I got his contract. He's still getting paid.
And that's right? I know. It's crazy what he signed with her for. That's hilarious. Now, then she asked about drugs. So basically, if the disability tax, I think I know what she means by that. It is not whether or not you have a job or you don't have a job. It has income. It has nothing to do with you being physically impaired. You can't work. It is, do you have a disability that otherwise, if it wasn't for medication, otherwise, if it was in any capacity, you would be incapacitated, right? So let's use my client's manic depression. She has manic depression, right? Therefore, she kept getting denied about 15 years ago, but things have been broadened. They've changed, and it got back to 2018, which filed all of her taxes as if she's had disability tax credit since 2018. She'll be good, right? You're right, Frank. You need to be persistent on this type of stuff because doctors sometimes look at it from a medical perspective. Is this person physically disabled? Well, that's not what CRA is asking. So, Frank, you want to expand on that? That's like, you know, idiosyncrasy that between the two professions?
So do you want me to go into more of like a technical discussion of how to qualify for the disability tax credit? Would that be helpful?
No, just that would be helpful. Yeah, like basically talk about why is there, you promoted something along the lines of, for example, your own advocate, right? And like, I've had children with ADHD, ADD, type 1, insulin dependent, all qualify for the disability tax credit. They're fine. They hold jobs. They're totally cool, but they actually have a disability. So you want to talk about that, sure. Frank?
Yeah, sure. I mean, those are good examples of more recent changes to how Revenue Canada deals with those types of disabilities. There's a lot more recognition around mental illness, mental infirmities and disabilities. And so many of those types of illnesses and disabilities that may not have been approved even 5 years ago, Revenue Canada is more accepting of today. There was even a change, an administrative change a few years ago around type 1 diabetes. So you highlighted that example as well, which is one that now Revenue Canada approves those with type 1 diabetes to be eligible for the disability tax credit. There still needs to be some underlying funding that the government looks for when issuing the disability tax credit. So, and this sometimes gets a little bit technical, and I apologize. I don't want to be too technical in any sense, but I think it's important to understand sort of where they're coming from, right? Because disabilities, for example, for ODSP purposes, right? The way they define a disability is different than how Revenue Canada defines it for tax purposes. Or similarly, if you're entitled to the Canada Pension Plan disability benefit, you know, CPP treats disability different than, say, again, Revenue Canada. So the question is, you know, how does Revenue Canada define a disability for purposes of the D? So what, you know, a couple things. First off, you know, they basically say that an individual with an impairment must either have that impairment be prolonged, meaning that it lasts or it's expected to last for at least a 12-month period, and that it's present about 90% of the time, right? So disability's there. You've had it for at least 12 months, and it's prevalent most of the time, or what they call substantially all of the time, which they define as 90%. So that's the general sort of rule. And if you think to yourself, okay, well, you know, you think about your own personal situation, perhaps, or your child's, think, are so good, I qualify. Then a little bit deeper to look at the specific disability. And Revenue Canada is at whether or not the disability markedly restricts your ability to perform at least one basic activity of daily living, right? What's a basic activity of daily living? Well, essentially, you know it, feeding yourself, walking, hearing, and as well as a variety of mental functions as well, right? So you need to be markedly restricted from one activity of daily living. Okay, now you have to say, okay, well, what does that mean? What does markedly restricted mean? And again, here again, I'm sort of paraphrasing what they say, because this is what we as tax people need to kind of go with. And what they say is a person is markedly restricted if they are able to, or it takes an inordinate amount of time to one or more of those basic activity daily basic activity living, even with therapy or other assistance. And again, that this must be present substantially all the time, which again, as I mentioned, percent. So it takes to be markedly restricted, it needs to take an inordinate amount of time. Well, what does that mean, right? Like, what does it mean that if you have trouble walking, what does it mean to walk in an inordinate amount of time? And again, this is where the doctors need to be more involved, and it becomes a bit of a clinical judgment. But what they look for is for the medical practitioner to observe any recognizable differences in the time it takes that individual to perform that activity. And if it takes that individual at 3 times the average person to perform that same function, same age, then they consider it to be markedly restricted, right? So there's this very specific test, and it becomes a doctor's judgment as to whether or not you meet that test. Now, that's a pretty severe measure. And that's, you know, those that are truly limited in perhaps their function and mobility, maybe are not able to hold down a job, as an example. But to your point, Brandon, there are others who are you know, can hold a job, function, and still qualify. And that's because Revenue Canada has a different set of rules that say, look, if you're not markedly restricted, you can still be eligible for the disability tax credit if you are what they consider to be significantly restricted. So, you know, a little bit of a more lenient definition than markedly restricted, just significantly restricted. In this case, you'd have to have at least one basic activity of daily living that you're struggling with, right? So there needs to be more than a case. Or life-sustaining therapy, or you're blind, right? In those cases, that's sort of the criteria that Revenue Canada set out for qualifying for the disability tax credit. Sorry, it's a bit of a long-winded definition, but I think it's important to highlight that really what it comes down to is that doctor's assessment of your function. When they complete those forms, you know, again, as a parent, read it. And do you agree with the doctor's assessment? Because it's ultimately going to determine whether or not you're denied that claim or accepted.
No, and thanks very much for that. I mean, like, it is very confusing, and you can understand why. One of our watchers right now, which by the way, I need to acknowledge, only because we've got Leanne made a great comment. Our thoughts and our prayers are going out to the people down east. You know, I've got a family down in Nova Scotia, and also in Newfoundland, Labrador. My one side of my maternal side of the family is all from Nova Scotia. So thoughts and prayers with the hurricane heading your way. So I want to make that a address first and foremost, because that's pretty damn scary. But then Stone Sea, which basically said, wouldn't it make sense to have it the same across? Great question. And we're dealing with, oh, there's your answer. Nothing is simple and straight line when dealing with government agencies. It is the most frustrating thing. And, you know, my heart goes out to people with disabilities, because they're already markedly, you know, at a disadvantage. Off down there. I know you guys are. You guys will be fine, but, you know, we're thinking about guys. Your heart goes out to these people who, I'm not going to qualify, or I'm not disabled, or I'm not this. And it's just like, this is a tax situation. This is not whether or not you can't work. And then now to lead into something else, which is the RDSP, the Disability Savings Plan, which you can only get if you have the ability tax credit. So Bondo, you had a question for Frank regarding the RDSP.
Yeah, and I am coming through okay. I'm a little glitchy. My technology still can attest to it, so I apologize. Just conceptually, on our audience to understand, we've got the one earmark that helps you for the retirement, but what is it, and what's the contribution or kind of tax savings that disabled individual will be entitled to?
Okay, yeah. So sorry, I was broke up a little bit there. I my understanding is you just kind of want to understand sort of why someone would set up an RDSP and, you know, what kind of tax savings would they achieve from it? Is that what I'm understanding here?
Yes, that's pretty much what he, yeah. That's what he asked.
Okay. Yeah.
If there's a percentage or a cap.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I mean, let's touch on some of these kind of criteria. As I mentioned, there are lots of rules, right? And limits and caps and grants and bonds. So at the outset, what you want to think is, people may be more familiar with the Registered Education Savings Plan, right? The RESP, where, you know, a parent can contribute to this account. And it's designed for education savings, and the government will match those contributions and put a little bit of money away for the children's education, as a way for the government to support parents helping kids save for post-secondary. And so the RDSP was sort of modeled after that RESP platform, in the sense that, you know, one, it's a registered plan. So what that means is it's registered with the government. And just like your RRSP, any money that's in the plan, as long as it stays in there and is earning income and investment earnings, the government won't tax it for as long as it remains inside the RDSP. All right. So it's a tax deferred vehicle is what we generally refer to them as. And like an RESP, any contributions that go in are not tax deductible. So a parent putting money in for their child's RESP is not going to give them any sort of tax deduction per se. So it's after-tax money that goes in. But the investment earnings are tax deferred. Kicker to all this is the government matching that's available. The money that the government will set aside and contribute to that child's RDSP relative to an RESP. You know, we saw a comment there from Leanne. We did RESP contributions. It kind of helped. Well, it kind of helped because the matching is okay, right? But with RDSPs, the matching is incredible in my view. So the matching, there's two different incentives that the government will support those with RDSPs. One is called the Canada Disability Savings Grant, right? And the other is the Canada Savings Bond. So the grant itself, it's up to $70,000 over the course of the beneficiary's life, right? And payable to the account up until the end of the year in which they turn 49, right? So for young children, you've got lots of time to kind of make annual contributions to these plans. And that's based on, contributions that go in. And it's also based on income, right? So different matching for different income levels. And then there's the bond, because we hear from a lot of parents, struggling parents in particular, that, you know what, it's great we can open up an RDSP, but we can't afford to make any contributions. And we still say, you know, particularly for low-income Canadians, it still makes sense to open it up. Why? Is because there's an additional bond that the government will pay. It is not based on contributions. It's solely based on income alone. So if you meet certain income thresholds, I think for 2022, it's about family income of $50,000. So if you're under that threshold, you can receive up to $1,000 per year or up to $20,000 for the lifetime of the beneficiary. So we have up to $90,000 in government grants that can go into the RDSP. And, you know, to Brandon's point earlier around those who are getting DTC eligible today but are being retroactively eligible, say Brandon's client who goes back to 2018, you can, with an RDSP, retroactively, in Brandon's case there, go back to 2018 and start to collect some of the grants and bonds that they may have been entitled to from 2018 on. So very quickly, we see these accounts that start off very nominal, but with regular contributions, grants, and perhaps some bonds, as well as the market performance. I know this year has been a little bit tough, but over the long term, performance, you know, these accounts grow quite substantial and really provide a secure pool of money designed for the retirement of those with abilities.
A fabulous explanation. Thank you.
Yeah, and it's extremely extremely powerful. Another good thing about it is the retroactive and company like McKenzie, what they do on the back end, what you don't see, because they take your SIN number. It's all based, the matching is all based on income. So if net income is under around $90,000 a year, you can get a 300% matching, which is insane. So I've had in many cases my clients contribute 35 contributions and get 10,500, the maximum grant money government will give out in 1 year. So you've contributed 35, the government contributes 10,500. Holy crap, that's a 100% return on your money.
It's amazing.
That's insane. And then they keep
That's right.
How retroactive?
Yeah. So I mean, that's why they go back as far as 10 years or to the date of disability, right? So as far back as 10 years. So on top of that, what they'll do is apply all the highest matching grants first, right? So they kind of help maximize your RDSP as quickly as possible. So just very, very quickly on that, you know, Brandon said a 300% matching. So your RESP, you contribute, and the government will match 20% up to a $500 per year maximum per year and up to $1,000 in any 1 year or something like that. With an RDSP, to Brandon's point, for 2022, if your income, family net income is under $100,000, the first $500 contributed attracts a 300% match from the government. 300%. You put 500, government puts in 1500. And then a 200% matching on the remaining 1500, right? So just incredible matching rates. And then if your family income is higher than the 100,000, it's a 1-to-1 matching. So put in $1,000, you get $1,000. So not as generous, but still pretty good. And so those are kind of a little on the it's a little bit on the annual grants. Now you can have this ability to go back up to 10 years and collect retroactive grants, and that's where the government says, well, we'll allow you to go back, but the most we'll pay you, or the most in grants you can collect in any 1 year, is $10,500, right? So, you know, it gets a little bit tricky because you want to figure out, well, okay, how many to contribute this year to get that 10-5. That's where you work with a financial advisor. That's where you work with you guys. That's where your value comes. And you work with the clients to help determine, okay, what makes best sense here? How much do we need to contribute to get that max grant? And in some cases, for those who are, you know, eligible for 10 years of retroactive grant, you know, contribution date, a few $1,000 a year, you get 10-5. And you do this for a few years, right? After 4 or 5 years, you know, we've seen cases where the family has contributed over the course of 5 years, say, you know, anywhere around 15 to 20,000, but now you got an account that's, you know, closing in on 100,000 with grants and bonds and, you know, performance and everything else. So these things can accumulate quite quickly. And it's all because of the power of the grants and bonds that you might be eligible for.
No, and that's great. We have a couple questions coming in, which is great. So we'll just, I'll just quickly just get everyone up to speed. Leanne was saying she was in a car accident in 2015. Sorry to hear that. Two C-spine surgeries. And so, holy smokes, do we have this for adults? Yes, Leanne, the RDSP is not, is you could have the RDSP for your entire life. That's totally fine. But grants and bonds will only go until December 31st in the year you turn 49. And there is a criteria that you need to follow. Is they follow like the LIFO rule, which is last in, first out. There is a clawback. We're not going to go into that here because Frank and I will lose you calculations that the government uses to figure out what the clawback is. But if you take grant money applied at the age of 49 and you take it out at age 55, yes. Yeah, so Liam, you can have an RDS, but you would, Frank, can, if she has a disabled, if someone has a disability and they're just finding out this for the first time, can they retroactively go back even though she's 50 now? Did he freeze?
Oh, it almost looks like it. At one point, frozen. The eyes were rolled back in his head.
He glitched there a bit.
Yeah. Oh, there we go.
I don't know if it's me or you.
Coming.
Oh, his. You're coming in. Yeah, coming in a bit glitchy. Oh, well, anyways. I'll find out that answer. But I know you can only contribute, get get contributions. But if you're only about this now, I guess the question is, you practically go back 10 years in hypothetical. I don't know that answer. Oh, Frank, no.
Like, oh, weekend,
well, it, so you, there you are.
Oh.
Yes. Well, we'll figure it out. So, okay, well, let's keep going. Now, there's, we'll just get, Chris? No, it's glitchy for whatever reason. All right. Yeah, back in. There we go. All right, we'll keep this going. So, we'll find out when he gets a better connection. We'll right back on.
So, Brand, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So my mom, say right now, is she's been disabled since bipolar, I believe, early 40s. She now contribute money and from between the ages of 40 and 49, say.
Yeah, so we got to find out when Frank comes back in. Oh, there he is. Hey, bud, how are you? Can you hear us okay? Oh, there goes.
He's gone.
This is what happens when you do it live, right? I mean, it is what it is. So yeah,
shit happens.
We don't know what can happen. I have to ask him that question. I believe, because we've always been told that it's a hard, fast rule. But if you didn't qualify, like, for example, my client, she's 63. So opening up an RDSP for her right now is just pointless. As Frank tells me, I mean, only because her would only go back to 2018. Right? And so she was still over the age of 49 at that, so it doesn't really matter. But if someone had a disability and they said, no, she's had this since 2002, that would then make her, 43. Could we open up an RDSP and take advantage of, let's say, maybe 10 years worth of returns to get some grant money? I don't know that answer. That's actually a really good question. But there's another piece to this. All disability tax, you can open up something like a Henson Trust. Now, a lot of people here are wondering why, what's the big deal? Well, if we're talking in the province of Ontario, basically you can qualify for ODSP or on the Ontario Disability Benefits, right? Right? The Ontario, every province has some, you know, of similar people that have the disability tax credit. The problem with it is, though, upon the death of the parents or grandparents, it doesn't really matter, and if they leave anything to the child on their will, and that child gets any gets assets, what ends up happening is they can get kicked off of disability benefits, which could severely impact that child. So what happens is you have something called the Henson Trust. It's a great story, actually. It's an amazing story. And it was a gentleman by the name of Mr. Henson, who had a severe disability, who did not have the cognitive ability to function or to manage assets. And so what ended up happening was is he left something in his will, and he left it in a trust. But the deal of the trust was that the trustee who manages the trust after he died would have full discretion and control over the assets held within that trust. The daughter would be the beneficiary. So very similar to higher life growing up. The dad owned everything. The dad made the decisions. The dad made he spent all the money. He owned all the assets. She did not have the ability to do that. So that was his argument. So he passed away. He's always the house and all the assets. And then the government turns around and basically says, you're kicked off of this. So the trustee, knowing that this was probably going to happen, takes the Ontario government to court and takes them up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court turns around and goes, Ontario, there's a difference between full discretion trust and parent who has full discretion over the assets of the said assets that are going into the trust. And therefore, if she wasn't kicked off of benefits before, then she can't be kicked off of benefits now, because the trustee is the one that actually has the problem, right? Like that makes all the decisions on what happens with the assets. Frank, are you back now? No, I don't think so. Maybe not.
So, sorry,
oh, there guys. You are. No problem. So, you want to talk about, we're just talking about the Henson Trust just now. And about it. So we were just chatting about the story about the Henson Trust and why it's important. And then also on top of that, there's about the RDSP also would not, any assets in the RDSP would not kick a child off of provincial benefits. Am I correct? Frank? Yeah, he's
deep in thought.
Yeah.
I can hear you. Yeah, no problem. Try the hear us though, Frank?
This is the glitch episode.
Yeah, this is definitely this is going you know what? The internet out here is just crap, basically it. So you are any in an RDSP Frank has a bad connection, guys. Okay, good. So we're fine. So basically, anything out of the RDSP would not kick a child off of provincial benefits, and anything inside a Henson would not kick the child off of provincial benefits. So it's something that you need to be very aware, and you need to really talk to a lawyer, Bondo, about setting up a will with the paragraph. This is essentially what it is.
Clause
constructing the assets. Yeah, the clause that instructs the asset to be assets to be directed to a Henson trust. And then Bada, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's quite simply what you're doing is you're circumventing that disabled individual being kicked off ODSP or the potential for them ODSP, because what you're going to take from those trust funds supplements what the person needs to survive, essentially, right? So they're not this big asset. They are, but they don't have access to it. He controls it. So it doesn't really become their money. It only trickles out to them.
Okay. So, yeah. Easter, we lost that.
Okay. Yeah, it's to supplement the disabled person, right? That's the whole purpose. They have their stream of income, and now these assets are really simply to continue to substyle the way they're accustomed to living, right?
Right.
So no, and then that's the limit on how much they can tie into those funds without being cut off a lot of times.
Right. Yeah. So this is the big thing. I mean, Jeff, do you have any questions about this particular? No. Okay. Yeah. You're really good conscience there, bud. This is good. This is
good. What do you want me to do?
No. I mean, any have you got any questions? You're all good, Frank?
Yeah, no, everything's either being asked or already answered before it can be asked.
Okay. And Frank, are you back? Or maybe try no band, maybe try no video? All right. Well, I don't know. Well, I can't wait. We'll try this again. We'll have them again. I don't know what's
yeah. You might have dial up there or something. I don't know what's going on.
He's in Catherine, so I mean, like, he's got established internet, so I
yeah, but it could be a number of things, right? It could be if he's if there's too many people on his network right now. It could be you know, potentially the computer restarting, priorities given to network connections, so many variables.
Right.
Stars just aren't aligned.
Like the Bondo tech issue this morning.
Yeah.
Good thing we only live 2 minutes apart, eh, Bondo?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
So is there any questions that anyone else has? I think we nailed all the questions here.
It's very important, though, for disabled, particularly that are struggling in this respect, to take advantage of these things. Not take advantage, just get there in place. I mean,
utilize.
I
think the biggest thing is people just need to be informed about it because they don't know that exists, right? That's the biggest thing.
Because, I mean, realistically, my mom doesn't have an RDSP.
Right. Well, and how old's your mom?
Should have known about it.
Now it looks like Frank's got it working, right? There we go.
Frank, there we go.
You hear me? Okay.
Yeah,
we can hear you. No problem.
Okay, well, I'm on my iPad now, so I get her out the window. I'm on my iPad. Wireless connection. I don't get it. I was hardwired in the computer. I'm not sure. So
your computer's hanging out with mine. Don't worry about it.
Okay. So Frank, you want to touch on?
I was in and out there, listening in on the Henson Trust. I could hear you guys. You just couldn't hear me. So yeah, did you want?
Okay.
Did you want me to comment around the Henson Trust?
Well, initially, let's comment on. Yeah, let's comment on the piece where it's. We had a question, which was if somebody, let's say, 50 years old, or Josh's mom, for example, or my client who's 63, and let's assume the disability tax credit can go back to 2002, right?
Okay.
And at that time, she was initially denied. Make her, if she's 63, 20 years ago, that make her 43. So she would have tech qualified for an RDSP during that time or contributions. Can someone retroactively go back that far and take advantage of grant money that they didn't get a chance to take advantage of?
Yeah, unfortunately, we can only go back as many as 10 years or to date earlier than 10 years, right? So that's kind of as far back as we can go. And you know, we are, how many years? We're 14 years into the, you know, even those who've had disabilities from 2008 when RDSPs were first introduced, to go back more than 10 years and collect those grants, even though you may have been entitled to say 2008, right? But unfortunately, that's the importance of trying to get them set up as early as possible and then doing the best you can and we'll sort of figure out how to collect retroactively as much as possible.
So can we, so if someone who's 50 today and let's say, you know, they apply and they, and it goes back 10 years, let's say, they're 50, yeah. Can they, right? Because they're over, they're past the age of 49. Can they take advantage of some vote?
That's something that's misunderstood in this. That, you know, you mentioned it, Brandon, that, you know, the grants are available up until the end of the year in which you turn. When you turn 50, obviously you're no longer eligible in your 50th year, but unfortunately, you're not able to collect any grants for any year prior to the 50th year, right? So they won't pay any grants for age 50 on. So you kind of lose that access to the last 10 years, to as many years as you were entitled to it be prior to age 49. So critically important, especially for those who are 49 this year, they're ineligible to get to maximize what you can. Because come Jan 1, you're not eligible for anything.
Okay, then. You have to have an RDSP set up in order to qualify for any grant or okay, point.
Yeah.
And do you want to touch on the, I mean, you heard me talk about the Henson Trust and everything. Was there anything that I missed or I could have left out or anything of that nature?
Yeah, I caught bits and pieces, and I heard the story. It was great. So it's important to note that it was an Ontario case. And so, this, you know, tested and true here in Ontario. So we know that an Ontario trust is a valid trust for purposes of helping keep their ODSP benefits. So, you know, the Henson Trust, what is it really? All it does is give me, which is the person who's responsible for managing the trust money, full and unfettered discretion over the assets of the trust. And is that child with the disability? And then I heard, I think it was Josh, you mentioned it, that the child does have no access, no right to access any of the income, and that it has to be at the absolute full of the trustee. And as long as that language is place in the trust, then you have an Hansen trust that could help protect the ODSP benefits for the kids, or for the recipient of the ODSP. So it's the assets, right? It's the Hansen trust assets. So a parent may, you know, look at kids, if they leave it to them directly, might hurt the kids' ODSP, right? Because there's asset and income tests to that need to be met. Any assets of the Hansen trust as well as the RDSP are ODSP purposes. So it's a way to leave wealth to kids on without affecting their ODSP benefits. And because I get this question a lot. So the income test is $10,000 a year. So as the trustee, that the person with the disability doesn't exceed the $10,000 annual limit, otherwise their ODSP benefits start to be clawed back. So what you distribute out of the trust will to them. And it's important to note, because I'm asked, you know, is it just the income earned in the trust that affects ODSP? What if you pay out capital? And it's important to note that any payments out of the trust go towards that limit. So it's any distributions that the trustee makes out of the Hansen trust to that will go towards that $10,000 annual ODSP income test limit in mind. The other is, and I'm not sure if you mentioned it, Brandon, that these are trusts during your life, or could be set up as part of an estate plan of the will and become effective on the parent's death. So some flexibility around how you would create the trust.
No, I appreciate that. And so the limited is a key piece, right? That's something that you need to be very aware of, because that can significantly impact the ability, right, to stay on provincial benefits. And we need to remind people that every jurisdiction is different, right? So every provincial jurisdiction will have different rules. So you need to understand, you need to deal with provider to understand what those specific rules are and how to navigate them. Because when we talk about, we talk about Ontario specifically, because we see these cases all the time. But like, you know, Newfoundland, Labrador would have very, very much a different variation to their provincial benefits. Same with, you know, Nova Scotia, BC, you know, all the provinces that I'm licensed in. And so I know that they completely can change. So the other thing that I see happen quite a lot is families with disabilities, with children with disabilities, do get taken advantage quite a bit, especially our attorney piece. I've heard families in Ontario be charged something like $2,000-$3,000 to Hansen clause in their will. That is completely highway robbery. That should not be the case. As one lawyer who we refer, you know, a good chunk of business to me, and said, he's like, Brandon, he goes, listen, it's one paragraph in a will. He goes, why would I be charging $1,500, $2,000 for that to happen? He goes, it's a copy and paste, right? And so people need to understand that that's the case. And I've you know, it does hurt. It you know, breaks my heart when I hear people get taken advantage of and fleeced, because they make it sound like it's this complicated, convoluted piece in a will, and it's not. You want to talk about that, absolutely, Frank?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you know, definitely when we're talking about creating a trust in a trust or a different type of trust, generally they tend to just be it's an, you know, when you create a trust in a will, you're not creating a separate document. It's all language, and so to your point, a Henson trust, again, all we're giving the trustee absolute and unfettered discretion. And those words tip are in, built in the trust document, which in what we're talking about is in a will. It might be a bit more costly is if you create create an inter vivos trust and you want it to Henson trust. Yeah, it's not just about putting a paragraph into it already. Now you're actually creating a brand new trust deed, a trust document. I think, you know, still $2,000 is still probably too much. Maybe the clients may be getting taken advantage of, but it's a little bit Henson trust that you would include in a will.
I would say it's a small bump on the cost of drafting a will, right? It's a small bump to the Henson issue.
Sure. Yeah.
And Bondo, saying there's a couple of lawyers that, couple of lawyers that, I mean, I don't know them, but that were, you know, highway robbery, these clients of mine, couple clients, $2,000-$3,000 to a will done with the Henson trust. That's just, that's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you got to understand the situations for full unfettered comments, right? Because if it was there was a corporate will, right, there could be an instance where the whole package kind of gets up to $2,000, but I would definitely not say just a draft a simple will with a Henson.
This was definitely this was a will, a mirrored will is what it was. So it was very simple. So unfortunately.
Yeah. These are, anyway, I think the Henson trust in general, such with disabilities. I mean, look, like we've talked about Henson trust. So these are really important. That really didn't exist 10, 15 years ago. So the plan and opportunity, opportunities that that are available for those with disabilities and trying to look after someone with a disability, the world's really changed, but it's complicated, and obviously a lawyer, not one is going to overcharge you, but a good lawyer you can trust and a financial advisor you can see in the right direction are actually absolutely pivotal. In the past, those with disabilities really didn't much wealth because whether they didn't have income earning or were just looked after by other family members with modest now we're seeing those with disabilities either inheriting significant amounts of wealth through things like the RDSP accumulating a significant amount of wealth. So your services that you provide to Canadians with disabilities has grown in importance, especially over the last few years.
Helps us.
I appreciate that. Anything else? Bondo, you have any other comments?
Good discussion. Good description of it. Thank you.
And by the way, one last point on the Henson trust. So it's part of an estate plan. And you might be thinking your kids are DSP. You can do it up, and I'm not sure we touched on that lifetime limit of contributing. So there's a $200,000 limit. Everything over and above $200,000, you can say put into an Henson trust, and that would those ODSP benefits. Or put all the money in the Henson trust. And what we often see is that the trust annual contributions to the RDSP from the trust, right? So the RDSP, and that's a great way from an estate planning perspective to the kids and part of your estate plan. So something to think about. Obviously, you know, want to you know, have to meet with the experts here and talk about how to implement all this, but things that are available now that are so critical.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate you taking the time, and I apologize to, you know, you had to go through all those tech issues. That kind of sucks, but we really appreciated you coming on. This is just over an hour, so it's a good little episode. I hope people found this to be insightful, at least. And if you have any further questions, you can see down at the bottom, email us info@professionalinsights.ca, and keep the questions coming. But other than Bondo, if you want to take us out.
Help us. Help you. Stay in.
Ciao.
Out.
Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all had.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Produced by Crier Media and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.